iPhone is broken. Your iPhone is broken. You goofed around and dropped it. Now your iPhone is broken.
Hello and welcome to the Talkassy Best 30 Plus Minute App Conversation. You're gonna hear all week long. I'm your host, Erfan Elijah. Joining me today, climate scientists are concerned that icebergs melt faster when he goes shirtless. Buster.
Ideas here. Hey, man.
Keep that shirt on, dude.
Oh, nips are
ocean levels are right now. Yeah. Also joining us, the CEO of Stella Artois sends him handwritten Christmas cards each year. Leander Caney is joining us.
Hello, iPhone. Hello, Buster. Hello,
also with us to share more wild and wacky stories from the cult of Mac, David Pierini is joining us. What's up, David?
I'm good. How about you, Irfan?
I'm very well, thank you. All of my predictions, they're all coming true, guys. You're going to be calling me Irfstrodamus by the end of this episode. Because my power of foresight has been confirmed. I think this week we'll be talking about the new MacBook Pro rumors, the huge refresh, upcoming refresh rumors that I've been predicting for months now. We'll also be talking about more stories from the cult of Mac. And David, what do we got on tap this week?
We are going to talk a little bit about music and how Apple and some of its iconic devices tend to make a showing in music lyrics. And we're going to talk about a guy who's actually written songs about the iPhone and the iPad. And because of them, he's been able to make a living in music.
Oh, so this is something that he does professionally still.
Yeah, it's a really great story. Are we talking about this now?
No.
Okay.
No, we're not.
We're just teasing him.
I was just curious, yeah, because I listened to some of the songs. And I didn't really know what to think. They're like really, really bad, but also really wonderful at the same time.
Yeah.
Like they're so bad, they'll get stuck in your head.
Yeah. I mean, he's really got a knack for the comedic and the absurd.
Yes.
Every one of his little songs/videos that you see on YouTube, it's like a mockery of commercials. We'll talk about
this.
We'll
go into detail about that.
Yeah.
Oh, and stay tuned to the end for a new segment, As You Wish. The segment driven by suggestions from listeners on our CultCast subreddit, thecultcast.reddit.com. Stick around for that. Leander, before we hop into the news, would you care to tell us about your favorite bear that tunnels?
Oh, I love Tunnel Bear. Tunnel Bear is my favorite virtual private network. I do love Tunnel Bear. It's true, I do. And I pay for it, and I've been paying for it for a long time. But our listeners can get a free trial of the best, the fastest, the easiest to use virtual private network if they go to get.tunnelbear.com. And we want to thank Tunnel Bear for supporting this episode of the CultCast.
Is it gettunnelbear.com or get.tunnelbear.com?
It's get.tunnelbear.com.
Okay. Get.tunnelbear.com.
Lots of dots, yeah. Get.
So many dots.
.tunnelbear.com.
I like dots, though, so that works for me.
Oh, yeah.
I also want to thank FreshBooks for supporting this episode. You know, I paid for FreshBooks long before they became a sponsor. I was paying for it just like any average Joe out there. And
sound like Matthew McConaughey.
all right. Thing I love about FreshBooks is I keep getting older, but it stays the same age. Nobody? Okay, good. Thank you. At least one person got that reference.
I do, yeah.
FreshBooks, of course, is the online invoicing software that will help you send invoices to your clients, get paid faster. It's absolutely wonderful. And it can also help you track all of your expenses. It's going to save you an absolute ton of time. I was doing an invoice for a client just a couple days ago, and it took me all of 30 seconds to create the invoice, send the invoice, and I was done. That's how quick FreshBooks is. And if you want, you can actually set up reminders so that if your clients don't pay, FreshBooks will automatically reach out to those people with reminders or let them know that they have upcoming payments. It will do all the stuff that you really don't want to do, nor do you have the time to do. And do you really want to be bugging your clients and saying like, hey, did you get that invoice? Oh man, it'd be great if you could pay it. I would really like to get paid. No one wants to do that. It makes you seem like a weakling. You can let FreshBooks handle all that stuff for you. And then live your life. Go out and do the things that you actually want to do. They also have a new credit card reader. So if you're doing a business in person with someone, you can slap in the FreshBooks credit card reader and accept a credit card right there. And of course, it integrates with the invoices, so the invoice will be marked as paid. FreshBooks.com/cultcast. You can get started with a free trial. Check it out yourself. I think you're going to love it. Very, very fairly priced and extraordinarily powerful. FreshBooks.com/cultcast. Please enter cultcast in the how did you hear about us section. Okay, let's jump into the first news item, Buster. I thought this was great because we were just talking about this last week. Apple plans to make an Amazon Echo rival device, and part of that is going to be by opening Siri. Please do tell.
Yeah, so it sounds like they're going to release a Siri SDK at WWDC so third parties can build their apps into it, which could make Siri actually useful for the first time.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. This is something that would make me actually use it,
because
all the apps I use could actually, you know, take advantage of it.
Yeah.
But they're also talking about creating what is essentially would be an Amazon Echo device. Is that right?
Yeah, so there was a new report just came out today that said that they're thinking about upgrading the Apple TV to give it a microphone and speaker and just running everything through the Apple TV instead of doing a speaker like Amazon's done. I don't know how I feel about that, because my Apple TV is like in my bedroom right now. I would probably never use that feature, you know?
My Apple TV is hidden in my media center, you know, and the doors are closed.
Right.
So I don't know how I feel about that either, because that seems like it would impede the Apple TV's ability to actually understand my commands.
You'd have to do it through the remote, right? You'd have to talk to them like you do with Siri now.
Well, because you'd have – well, the remote doesn't have a speaker, so you'd have to be near the TV. But what if they just made like a remote that was like big sized and could last for a while? And you could just leave it around the house with you and take it with you and ask it questions.
Yeah, like the size of a brick. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be attached to a necklace.
Yeah, something. I don't know. Just something slightly bigger than the current one, which I always lose. Like, I don't see why they have to make it impossibly tiny.
The remote.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be better though if they just made an Echo-like device that just sat in your living room somewhere?
Like the shape of an apple.
Yeah, exactly. It needs to be the shape of an apple, or it needs to be a bust of Steve Jobs or something. You know, something that just sits there and that looks pleasant. Actually, that would be cool. If they made a bust of Steve Jobs or Steve Wozniak, and every time it spoke, the eyes glowed.
Like a Zoltar or something.
Like Zoltar, exactly. That would be something that I would spend at least $700 on.
The Woz is all knowing.
What can the Woz do for you today? The only problem is that you would never get a chance to ask it questions. It would just keep speaking. Like, geez, I wish I could ask Woz a question. It's always just telling me stuff. So the information was reporting that Apple is working on an Amazon Echo-like device with a speaker and a microphone that people can use to play music, you know, get the news headlines, set a timer, which after using the Echo for the last 4 weeks, I would say is all the stuff that it does pretty well. And I think this is a great idea. I'm not really sure if a device like this is something that is going to still be around in 10 years. I'm still on the fence. Leander, as you know, I think the Echo is a lot of fun. I don't think it's an essential device. It definitely makes some things very convenient, but it isn't this magical revolutionary device, at least in my opinion. But it would be cool to have a device that does what the Echo does and be in the Apple ecosystem, because oftentimes some of the stuff I want to do with the Echo, it tries to, you know, pull me into the Amazon ecosystem. Like if I want to create a reminder, it creates a reminder in Amazon's system. And I'm like, I don't use Amazon system for reminders.
Yeah, right.
So it'd be cool to have a device like this that hooked into iCloud. And I do think it would be useful to have voice commands in your house. I mean, I'm using the Echo more and more. And it's just, there's definitely a learning curve there, though.
Well, this is the next, you know, the next generation of computing devices. They're going to be...
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, everyone's getting into it. You but know, Facebook, kinda,
yeah,
Google.
It's the bots, right?
Right.
It's like a, you know...
the bots,
it's
man,
a completely,
the bots.
There's no interface. You just have the bots doing everything.
Yeah, no, you know, and it's all, you know, instead of it being pushed, it's all pull. You ask it questions, you get it, you know, you ask it to do things for you. It's definitely, this is definitely where computing's going. And it's still, you know, it's super, super early days now. But this stuff is definitely going to advance.
I'm not sure if this is truly where we're going with computers or if this is like 3D television. You know, it's just that thing that everyone pushes and then eventually...
Well, I don't know. Yeah. You know, like, I think I was skeptical too, but I think Amazon shows, you know, the Echo shows that it's actually kind of it really is useful, and especially with IoT and if you know and home automation, smart home, cars, you know, smart cars. Apple is going to be doing this for the car. This is going to be a big part of the UI for the car.
You mean voice control?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right, and maybe in the future when the bots take over, we will just be able to speak naturally to these devices. And as you said, it's still early days. I just missing that visual component is such a big deal to me, and I kind of compare it to: would you rather watch a video or listen to radio? You know, there's such different mediums. I don't know if one could take over for the other. I don't think that visual computing is going anywhere, or the Echo is going to take over for visual computing in any way. Maybe it will just be tertiary to it. I'm not sure. I guess, like I said, I'm just not convinced. And using it day in, day out now, I'm like, man, it's nice doing some things on the Echo, but at the end of the day, I just want to sit down and have a laptop on my lap.
Right.
Right? And you would too.
Well, yeah. But, you know, talking to the TV, when I use the Apple TV, the best way to interact with it is to use Siri, is to actually talk to the thing. And you can see that, you know, if that, you know, it, that for a lot of tasks, this is going to be the best way to control a computer or a smart device.
Let's wait 5 years and see. Well, if we get an Apple version, I'll probably be changing my tune and be talking about why it's the coolest thing that's ever been invented and why didn't Amazon think of this. Let's move on to my favorite news, probably of 2016, maybe ever.
MacBooks.
So we got a story this week from Apple analyst Ming-Chi Kuo, some whispers. And as many of you know, he is probably the most accurate Apple analyst. He says that new MacBook Pros will be coming out. They're going to have a drastic redesign. They'll be coming out in Q4 of this year. They will be thinner and lighter, which you probably surmised. They will include an OLED display that will replace the function buttons on your keyboard. So, you know, like the volume up, volume down, the buttons that control the brightness of your keyboard and of your screen. So that little strip of buttons above your keyboard will be replaced with an OLED bar. Crazy. He also said that it will include Touch ID, something that I have been wanting on a Mac forever. I would love to not have to type in my password anymore, yet have the entire device encrypted. And he says it will employ the same metal injection molded hinges and butterfly keys found on the 12-inch MacBook Pro. I have been professing for many moons that we are long overdue for a MacBook Pro. It has been 4 years since the last redesign, and it was 4 years before that when we went to the unibody design. So it's really been 8 years since we've seen a massive, massive change to the MacBook Pro, I would argue.
It sounds awesome. It really sounds great. Although I'm kind of curious, what do you think that the touch bar would be? Why would you want to have changeable keys?
I think it's to...
like it's a...
make it more customizable.
Yeah,
I mean, so
big key that morphs, like,
exactly.
You know, like you can push the speaker button, maybe like then it would like show all. You know, I don't know. I can think you could do some really interesting things with it, like a super thin OLED strip right there.
And plus, that way you can set up your own buttons, because there's buttons on that bar, I'm sure, that a lot of people don't use.
Oh, yeah, like the play and fast. I mean, there's lots of buttons that, like, you only need them during certain times, too. So the bar could adjust based on the contextual. That you're in, too. Right. Yeah.
That would be interesting, right? Wouldn't it? Because, you know, they sell those overlays for, like, Photoshop keyboards and sound editing and stuff like that. That would be interesting.
Yeah,
that would be super handy to have it be contextual.
That's
like you're in Photoshop, and you could
press
a button and have the tools switch to whatever you want.
Yeah,
and then also I just think you can customize your computer to be more how you use it. So I mean, I have this mission control button up here and this expose button that I never use because I think the mission control feature in OS X is totally pointless.
Right.
So yeah, it definitely makes it much more usable for everyone. And it's going to look cool, too. Maybe you could, reprogram it so it has, little visualizations when you play music and stuff. And so once your peyote kicks in, you can just
like a party tripping in your house.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Rave. So you're just sitting there spacing.
It would have gesture controls and stuff, too, right? So you could be able to maybe.
I don't know. That would be cool. I didn't read anything about that.
You already have that, though, in the trackpad anyway. So
yeah, that's true. The thing that I'm not sure about in this rumor is the 2000 or the Q4 2016 date. I think this is really late in the year.
Bummer, bro. Sorry.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of people listening who are just waiting to get their hands on the MacBook Pro. I still think they're going to announce this at WWDC.
Okay.
Because maybe Ming-Chi Kuo has his timing just a little bit off. Like if they announce it at WWDC, it will be in what quarter is that? January, February, March, April, May, June. So that means that they will be announcing it in Q2, and they could potentially release it in Q3. So in that respect, he actually wouldn't be that far off, and that makes more sense to me than waiting until they generally have their iPhone event. What, sometime in December?
Yeah.
Or excuse me, September. So if they don't talk about it or release it in June, they're going to have to wait all the way until September. I suppose they could do that, but then they're going to be announcing this huge redesign alongside the updated iPhones, which seems like a weird thing to do.
Yeah.
But with all the rumors of what iPhone 7 is turning out to be, actually, maybe that does make sense. They're just going to zoom through all the features of the iPhone 7.
We do have a new iPhone this year. Yes.
Yeah, here's the new iPhone.
And now on to the
looks the
Pro.
Same. Yeah, right. They're going to spend 5 minutes on it, and then they're going to run into the MacBook. Anyway, I'm extraordinarily excited. I've been waiting for a new MacBook Pro forever, and it's been so long since we've seen major redesigns. And as I said, can anyone deny on this program my ability of foresight? Does anyone want to deny my ability of foresight? Anyone?
You are so mighty and powerful, man.
Thank you.
Like, oh, it's just, you impress me. I'm in awe.
Maybe Apple should do a bust of you, and then we can ask it questions, and you could tell us
the answer to
Lisa's
questions.
I think that would be appropriate. It should come with me wearing like a headscarf of some kind with a jewel in it, and I'll be touching my temples.
Oh,
and I'd like it to have a movable jaw.
Right.
Let's talk about iCar Buster.
iCar?
Yeah.
It's so far away, man.
You know, honestly, it's not that far away. If we get it in 2020, that's only 3.5 years away.
I guess.
And that means they'd probably announce it in, you know, maybe 3 years. So really, we only have to wait 3 years before
we find out, man. Only 3 years. Maybe.
But apparently they're working on, purportedly, the charging infrastructure.
Yeah.
Reuters came out with a report that said they are investigating how to charge electric vehicles.
Yeah, I don't have a Tesla, so I don't understand how hard it is to get charged. But apparently that's the biggest thing, because different proprietary plugs and stuff. So Apple's investigating what it should do as far as making a network, whether it should be open, how
fast it's going
to
be.
That's the key.
They have to be really powerful. There was a report saying that, of all places, Hong Kong is one of the friendliest cities right now for electric vehicles.
Yeah.
Because they have a whole bunch of public charging stations.
Hmm.
But it's, forget the numbers. It was like one, it's like one charging station for every four cars. And apparently that is like way, even that's, it sounds like kind of a lot, but that's problematic because these things are in such high demand. And that the industry would like to see it, you know, one charging station for every two electric cars on the road. And in the States at the moment, it's 1 to 12, I think. So it's one charging station for every 12 electrical vehicles. But by the time Apple comes out with a car, and if they sell a boatload of them, I mean, that number's going to go way up, isn't it?
Right.
Probably. But, you know, they have the same problem Tesla has, is they really need to build out that charging infrastructure. And I think it benefits everyone to be working on this problem, which is why Tesla didn't patent a lot of their charging infrastructure patents. Yeah. Well, potential patents.
And that was
They need to build out this infrastructure so you can go anywhere, you know, within like, you know, a short drive and charge up your car. I think the Tesla charger charges it to 80% or something in 30 minutes. It's very fast so that you can be, you know, on your way. And even 30 minutes is kind of a long time. I mean, you're at the gas station for what, like 5 minutes?
I was talking to someone actually last week at this event that said that super fast charging is coming. That there's an Israeli company that can recharge a battery in a minute.
Wow!
And, what?
Yeah, and it's based on some new chemistry. They haven't. It's experimental. You know, it's like at the sort of the lab stage. So there's no indication that this can be commercialized. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's a lot of money going into this, and there's several competing technologies that are looking at it. And you can do fast charging, but it destroys the battery.
Or makes them explode.
Yeah, well, but it also it changes. You know, you want to have a trade off between the number of charge cycles, that its useful life. You know, so no one's going to buy a laptop or a phone, you know, with a built in battery that would say 100 charge cycles. I think now it's like rated for what, 300, so it would last a couple of years before it has to be replaced. But if there are fast charging technologies right now. But it destroys it vastly reduces the number of charging cycles.
Yeah, and that's a big problem for cars because a lot of times those battery charge packs are $5,000, $6,000. They're absurdly expensive.
Right. That's, I think, the single biggest expense of an electric car.
Yeah, right, because it's just a bunch of motors.
Yeah, right. And, I don't know. I mean, that's probably one of the things I'd have to look at. Does Tesla offer a warranty program now on its batteries?
Oh, I'm sure they do. I don't know how long the warranty program is. But, you know, if you buy a Nissan Leaf, their warranty, I think, is 8 years or 100,000 miles.
Right.
And so it's probably something comparable.
Tesla does some weird things, too, right, with its battery packs. Like, you can buy an upgrade, a battery upgrade.
Yes.
But unfortunately, really, it's exactly the same battery. All they're doing is giving you different software.
That was actually a big story recently, wasn't it? Because I've been hearing other people talk about this, and it's like when you buy a video game and then they charge you to unlock content that you've already purchased. You know, it's on the disc already. Well,
Yes, no.
It's kind of maddening.
Well, I think this is where you get into that kind of, you know, those discussions, because I think there are some subtleties. You know, that it sounds, on the face of it, it sounds like a complete ripoff. It's unbelievable. You've already bought this,
they're just
charging you for some
different feature set. Software. Yeah,
I know. It does. On the face of it, it sounds outrageous, but I think there are trade-offs, you know, in that, you know, that it lessens the length of the life of the battery, or... you know, it makes it less efficient or whatever. I'm sure there are trade-offs like that. I think there is a logical reason for them doing this, not just purely ripping people off, customers off.
Not just to charge you more money.
Yeah, right.
Because I thought they were physically giving you a different battery unit.
No, apparently it's the same battery unit. But
oh my gosh,
you know, you.
We're gonna start seeing more and more of that kind of stuff, I bet, as we see technology companies start making cars. Because that's the way technology companies think, right? It's like, oh, you want more features? We'll just include them in the software set. And then if you like, you can just unlock the features, you know, for a small fee. It's in-app purchases, in-car purchases. You're going to be on your way somewhere, and it's like, would you like to buy an additional 100 miles of range?
Right, exactly. This is what they're saying. Yeah, this is exactly what it does.
Let's hope we don't land there. Okay, before we hop into more stories from the cult of Mac, David, Leander, why don't you tell us a little bit more about Tunnel Bear?
Okay, my favorite bear. It really is. Tunnel Bear is a super, super easy to use virtual private network service that is very, very easy to install. You can use it on up to five devices with one account. And that's phones and computers and iPads. It's literally, sort of one swipe to enable a thing, and all of your traffic is protected, encrypted. You can tunnel to different countries to get around geolocation restrictions. And it makes it everything you do on the internet very, very secure and very, very private. And in an age when the internet is spying on every single thing you do, I think it's important to be using a tool like this. It's absolutely 100% necessary if you're going to do any surfing in public. Any kind of surfing, you must have a VPN to protect yourself from public Wi-Fis, which are super insecure and crazy to take that risk when you can get a very, very easy, very, very easy to use piece of software like Tunnel Bear to protect yourself. It's crazy to do that. And you can go to get.tunnelbear.com to sign up for a free trial account. And it's right up there. It's like, in the top five of things that you have to install when you get a new computer or a new phone or a new iPad. And it's something that, I bought and paid for myself. My mom buys and pays for. My brother buys and pays for. It's the, by far, in my experience, the easiest to use VPN and the best. So get.tunnelbear.com.
I also want to make a quick request too. We haven't done this in so long. If you haven't yet left a review for us on iTunes, those are tremendously helpful. And if you like the show and you'd be willing to take a minute or two to do that in your respective app store or not your respective app store on your respective iTunes, I will be so grateful. And if you tweet me and say, hey, I did this, in my mind, I will imagine you and I will embrace you in my arms. In my mind.
A virtual hug. Right.
It's a virtual hug for you. And I'll tell you, yeah, it will be one of the best virtual hugs you've ever received. And in fact, I'm envisioning you in my mind right now, and you're loving it. Your face just communicates that so effectively. You're in pure ecstasy right now. And if you don't like the show, if you're like, hey, you know what? I've been listening to this show. And, your show, The Verge Cast, really just isn't for me. And I want to leave it a one-star review. That's fine. We understand. That's definitely your prerogative. Head on to iTunes, search for The Verge Cast, and leave your one-star review there. We will totally understand. We appreciate you listening either way. That's the one-star review for The Verge
Cast. And I'll give you a virtual hug, too, if you get on Twitter or on Facebook and tweet out that five-star review.
Oh, that would be
even better. A little bit of word of mouth, a little bit of spreading the love.
That goes a long way.
We give the love back.
Do you remember? We do, and Leander means that in that mental hug he gives you. His hands might go downwards a little bit.
Yeah. Give him a squeeze. I don't know about that. I was going to say I'll buy you a Stella if I meet you in a bar. I'll buy you a beer.
Just make sure Leander's not drinking one of those beers with you, because that only leads bad things for you.
Beer-stained wife beater on.
So, yes, but truly, the reviews help us a lot. We never ask for them. We always are forgetful to do that, but they are tremendously helpful. So thank you if you've already done that. If you haven't already and you're going to, thank you for doing that, and you'll be receiving your free mental hug within mere hours after you have done so.
You better be sitting down, right? You better get ready for that.
After you've left that review,
you're gonna stay in the house, sit on the couch, because it might be coming any minute, and you don't want to be like doing anything physical.
Definitely not, because you're gonna be like, all of a sudden you'll just stop and you'll realize I feel all tingly. Ooh, something's happening to my body. It's because they're powerful, right. And you'll know when it happens.
Yeah.
All right, David.
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about these Apple songs this guy put out on YouTube.
And they will stick to your brain for the entire day. Just listen to one, I guarantee it. Let me back you up a little bit. This all kind of started with a conversation Leander and I had last week about, hey, let's look at music and let's see what kind of artists are making mention of Apple and various products like the iPhone and the iPad. Because, you know, it's become such a status symbol. It's about wealth and it's about coolness. And in fact, if you do kind of an internet search on the word iPhone, you'll find more than 300 songs with that makes mention of the iPhone.
Mm.
And you've got people like Jay-Z, Kanye West, Lil Wayne, Future. But the name that comes up at the top of that list so much is a guy by the name of Perry Gripp. And Perry Gripp is this guy who's actually written songs about the iPhone and the iPad. And a little story about Perry. He was the lead vocalist for a pop punk band that was on the verge of stardom.
Wow.
It got this incredible record deal, and they were going to go on tour, and they were starting to play the clubs, had some buzz because they did some music that was used in several episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but they washed out. They never...
Buffy?
They were never successful.
No!
And so Perry Gripp was going to quit music, but then he started to goof around around 2007, 2008, and he forced himself to write a song a week. And he would write about anything that came to his head. And it was kind of his way of having fun with music again. And he started writing these songs, and he would post them to YouTube. And they're just crazy, absurd comedy songs. And he was writing songs about the iPhone. He noticed that people were just going crazy about, I got to have an iPhone, I got to have an iPhone. And so he wrote songs about this, and his stuff went viral on YouTube. He then started publishing his songs on iTunes, and he started making a living.
He started selling these songs on iTunes too?
Some of them, yep.
He wasn't just putting them on YouTube.
No, he was posting.
Really?
And now he's on all the streaming services like Spotify, and he's made a fairly good living off this. But then he also started to make a name for himself, and he's now doing music for a Disney cartoon by the name of 7D.
Wow.
And he was just nominated for a Daytime Emmy last year for his music. So it's kind of this accidental career that just worked out beautifully for him.
We got to hear some of these songs. So
yeah. I
played one at the intro. So people definitely heard the iPad one to start. But let's play a little bit more of another one. This is going to be with you for the rest of the day, so I apologize.
Nerds are going to hate because they don't like the specs, but the specs aren't the point at all. It's all about the App Store and iTunes, the convenient distribution of software and media.
Which song was that?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know what song I just played.
I agree. He wrote two of these songs about the iPhone before he actually owned an iPhone himself. And he has a song called I Got No iPhone. And the lyrics go, there's one part that goes, like a boat capsizing, no hope on the horizon. Got a 2-year contract, and I'm stuck on Verizon. I got no iPhone. I got no iPhone. I got no iPhone.
Kudos for finding a rhyme for Verizon. Horizon.
Capsizing and Horizon.
Yeah.
And they're so absurd. People love them. I mean, it's a send-up of commercials and commercial jingles and our insane fascination with, you know, material things. And
was it people searching on YouTube for things like iPhone and iPad that led them to his stuff?
Yeah, indeed. And he also some of these songs used to be on iTunes. They've since been pulled because Apple has a policy now where you can't have a song title with the word iPhone or ringtone, because there were companies that were trying to scam their way into the iTunes, you know, by putting those words so that when people search for something, they would, you know, pull up their little advertisement.
Oh,
or
okay.
Something.
You're talking about on iTunes. I thought you meant just period, like they're taking down his YouTube videos.
No, not at all. It wasn't anything like that. But one of his songs is called "This Is My Ringtone," and I gave you a clip of that. It actually became the most popular ringtone on iTunes for like a week.
Okay, we got to play a little slice of that right here.
Yeah. This is my ringtone. It's on my iPhone. No, you don't have one. You're on the rise on. I waited in line. That's how I got mine. You sent your butt at home. You got no iPhone.
Yeah, I wouldn't make that my ringtone, but to each their own.
But people did. But he was a fascinating guy to talk to. Uh-huh. Very humble, very grateful, you know, for the, you know, unintentional path that brought him to this career. And he said he had a moment with his own father last year. You know, his dad was kind of disapproving, like a lot of dads when he was in high school and he picked up a guitar and he wanted to make music and be in a band. But then last year when he was nominated for the Daytime Emmy for his music, you know, his dad was really proud of him. So they kind of had that moment. He's just really one of those.
Was he just standing there? His dad was just standing there in tears as his son accepted the award. He's like, my iPhone is broken too, son. They just had this special moment.
I don't know. I don't think it was like that.
Okay. In my mind, that's exactly how it went down.
Yeah. And maybe Perry will write a song about it. Who knows?
Have you ever heard of Jonathan Mann?
I have not.
Jonathan Mann, we had him on Cultcast Second Hour some months back, and he kind of has done the same thing. He doesn't write a lot of Apple music, although he does here and there, and those songs sometimes take off because they are Apple related. In fact, he wrote a song about the I think the death grip, you know, if you hold the iPhone wrong, it would make your bars drop. And Steve Jobs actually talked about it in one of his keynotes.
They played it, didn't they, I think?
I think they played it. Yeah, exactly, because he said people were so passionate about the issue. And so that was a boon for Jonathan Mann because all of a sudden he got all this attention he wasn't getting before. But he was also just writing one song a day, which is what fascinated me about him, because I think I've tried to write songs before, and I'm, you know, somewhat musical, and it's difficult to write a good song. It's hard to write a song, period, but to write a good song, I think, is very difficult. So I was just totally fascinated with his commitment to write one song a day, and how do you find topics to write songs about, and what was his creative process like? In fact, if that interests you, you should check out our back catalog and look for the Cultcast Second Hour with Jonathan Mann and listen to that episode. It was really fun.
I'll do that, yeah.
And it's cool. Perry seems like he's kind of doing the same thing. And the funny thing is it's kind of worked out the same for him. I'm sure he has a lot of other songs that are kind of cheeky and fun about other topics.
Yeah.
But these Apple songs have really got him a lot of attention.
Well, and they were among his first songs that he had published on YouTube. And he's only written about 5 or 6 songs about anything related to Apple. He had one that he wrote specifically about the i4S, and he was, the way he sang it and did the video, it was as if Steve Jobs was singing. But he pulled that off YouTube because Jobs passed away right around the same time, and he thought that was in bad taste. But, you know, he's got some really funny songs. He's got one of my favorites is something called Last Train to Awesome Town, where there's just this absurd group of dancing with explosions in the background, and he's got another one called Space Unicorn, and
that sounds like it's right up Buster's alley.
Yeah. So yeah, check out Perry Grip on YouTube, and
we'll link to his video or to his channel in the show notes too.
That would be great.
Wow. I was just looking on Wikipedia. He also did Hamster on a Piano.
Yeah.
Oh, a classic.
Another classic, yeah.
And I Am a Banana. That was my son's.
I Am a Banana?
Yeah.
Who doesn't love that song?
I don't, because my son sings it all the time. And it drives me crazy.
Oh, really? So your kid knows who this guy
they
is.
They know these things. Yeah, I didn't realize that it didn't. You know, I didn't know the creator. I just know these memes. I mean, all this stuff
That's
is
hilarious.
Really viral. It looks like he was behind a bunch of them. He did Nom 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 too, which is another one.
But did he do it as well as you just now? That's
no, doubtful. Doubtful.
He also did much better. He's made this stuff. He looks like he's a viral, you know, meme master. Master of the meme.
He really knows how to write a catchy tune, at least for the internet. So
well, you know what the thing is that is continually surprising to me is, and I don't know if a lot of people realize this, maybe people who are around like people under the age of 10, but how massive YouTube is with people under the age of like, you know, 11, 12, 10. It is their world. They know all the big celebrities on YouTube, and some of these videos that are massively popular, you would watch them and you would be like, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Like, how could anyone watch this for more than 10 seconds? And yet, you know, they have 20 million subscribers on their channel and the kids can't get enough of it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And this guy seems like he's perfect for it. Like, I Am a Banana. What a perfect song title for a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
All righty, cool. Well, all of these stories and more will be in the upcoming Cult of Mac 2.0 book that David and Leander are working on. Doesn't have a release date yet. Right? Is that still true?
That is still true.
Okay. But, you know, we'll keep talking about these stories and eventually the book will come out and it will have all these wonderful stories inside. And I think it's going to be it's turning out to be a really cool book. There's all sorts of great stuff.
And I have to thank you, Irfan, for talking about the book project, because every week that I've been on Cultcast, someone has reached out to me through email and suggested a story idea that actually turned out to be really cool. And so
wonderful.
I wanted to take this opportunity to say, if you are one of those people that has a great story idea that you think we would like, hit me up at david@cultofmac.com.
There you go. And if you have a cool Apple story, you might end up in the Cult of Mac 2.0 book. I would be thrilled. That would be cool. I mean, the first Cult of Mac book, how old is it now, Leander? Like 8 years old? 10 years old?
2005, four. I think. Four.
And that was the book that started it all. How cool would it be to end up in the second edition of that book and talk about how Apple has tied you into some community that you were never involved with, or has, you know, catapulted you into some business that you never thought you would be involved with? I mean, I have one of those stories. Those stories are everywhere. It's weird how you can end up loving Apple and have it direct you into some area of business or life that you never thought you would be involved in. And that's what I think I like most about these stories is, like, this guy wasn't setting out to be famous. He was just trying to make some goofy videos. And it's totally altered the direction of his life. And now he has an avenue to make money in an industry that's notoriously hard to get into. And he's doing something that he loves. That is a pretty cool story, in my opinion. I sounded like you're about to say something, David, but were you done?
I was going to say, you said it perfectly.
Oh, thank you. I often do, but thank you for that compliment. Okay, let's move into the last segment of the show. As you wish, this is the segment where we talk about whatever the heck you want. And put aside our own agendas, we ask people to contribute stories on our subreddits, thecultcast.reddit.com. Unfortunately, we're running a little long, so I don't think we'll be able to go through as many of these as I had hoped, but we'll definitely do this again sometime. Thank you to everyone who contributed a story on our subreddit. We really appreciate it. Let's start with an easy one. This one comes from Johnny. He says, Subway or Sbarro? Buster.
Oh, dude, Sbarro. Because, one, Subway. Ew. But Sbarro, it's always at the mall. You get to, you know, chill at the mall and eat pizza and people watch at the food court. That's my jam right there.
I hadn't considered that angle. Yeah. Hadn't considered that. This is like such an easy choice. You're right. Subway, in my personal opinion, is just downright gross.
So horrible.
Yeah, I would never eat a Subway. I mean, I used to like Subway a lot, but all their meat has like the same like three ingredients in it. It's all made from like turkey and chicken. And
bread's horrible.
So yeah. Yeah, it's just generally all around not very good. And then you'll get molested by Jared. So you're like that $5 foot long. I'm not going to go there. That wasn't the foot long I was expecting. Plus, pizza. How can you say no to pizza? How can you say no to pizza unless you're...
Oh, my God. The baked ziti. I love their ziti. Yeah.
The only time I eat at Sbarro is at the airport. I never actually go to the mall.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm not a mall rat like Buster.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I don't think they have one in San Francisco.
Yeah.
No, of course they don't.
I don't think I've ever
San Francisco's too cool for a Sbarro, man.
Yeah, exactly. It's so corporate. Get out of here.
Oh, I'm sorry. They do have one. Yeah, Stones Town.
Oh, you should go there sometime.
At the mall.
It's pretty good. And their baked ziti is good, and their garlic bread rolls are good. Oh, man, I'm getting hungry just thinking about that. I want to have to go get some Costco pizza, the best pizza in the land. Okay, here is a question about Apple. This one comes from Zepto Knot. He says, how about a discussion on the state of gaming with OS X? I know iOS has nailed this, and tvOS is trying, and then he says, and failing, until they allow third-party controller-only games. But it seems like Apple's focusing more on productivity on their desktops and laptops. Where are the options for the serious gamer? Any thoughts on this, Leander?
I wish. I'm sorry. I can't really help. I don't play games. I mean, I played a few on the Apple TV. Mm-hmm. They were all lame, unbelievably lame. Except Crossy Road, but that's really frustrating. I suck at it so bad that I just sort of gave it up. You know what I did play? I played that Luminous City. That was, I thought, was really beautiful and a great game, a really, really great game. They made this this environment out of paper and filmed it, and so you progress through this beautiful 3D world that's all made out of paper. But that's, I don't really know anything about gaming, so I should shut up.
Anyone else want to add anything?
I think your only option is to use Boot Camp and to install Windows 10 on your machine, That's kind of like the reason why I don't play any PC games anymore, because I used to do that Boot Camp and play some games. But it's just not – it's such a big hassle. It's not worth it. If you really want a game, I don't think – you got to have a PC, a separate PC gaming machine.
Yeah. I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because not enough people have Macs, but I mean, clearly, PC, the PC world, the Windows world, they are the king of games.
Yeah, I mean,
and I just built a killer gaming PC, and it's so easy to do in the Windows world, especially with Steam now. What were you going to say about
Steam? What kind of games are you playing on that?
All sorts of games. I'm playing. Currently, I'm replaying through Borderlands, the complete saga with all the DLC and everything, which is super fun. It's one of my favorite franchises. I've been playing a lot of Polybridge, which is a really simple game where you build bridges and then you have to make sure that they are supported in the right places so you can drive your cars across.
Wow.
And it's like one of those just like jump in, jump out type games. Super nerdy, but kind of fun. And those are the kind of games you find on Steam, like, because Steam has so many indie games that you just wouldn't really ever see on Mac. And you can install Steam on your Mac, and some of the games are compatible with your Mac. But I don't know why games have never taken off.
I just there's just not many available.
There's just never
they
been.
They just don't develop. And like you're saying, the market's much smaller. You know?
Maybe that's why.
I mean,
that's probably why.
10% of the market for a long time. So
yeah, and if you're going to spend all that money developing a game, why wouldn't you go for the bigger slice of the market, right? I do think that he brings up an interesting point, and he said gaming is failing on the Apple TV. I think he's totally right. The games on Apple TV suck, and I think that his diagnosis at least partially might be the cause, in that Apple requires that all games support the controller as, or the remote as a controller for the games. And I just think that was a bad move. If you want people to have complex experiences in a game, they need to be able to play on a controller, and those control mechanisms don't translate well into a remote. So they're kind of shooting themselves in the foot. I understand they're trying to make games accessible to everyone, and that's probably why they did that, but it limits the kind of games that could be released on the Apple TV. And the Apple TV could be like an Xbox One console. It could be a thriving game marketplace if they would allow publishers to control the gaming experiences a little more and say, hey, look, this game is only supported by a Bluetooth controller. You can't play this any other way. And then maybe Apple, you know, sells their own hardware where they sell like their own controller or something. Then I think that games might proliferate on the Apple TV, because it's such a great way to buy games and to play games. But until they do that, the game experiences are going to continue to be these ridiculously lame jumping, you know, experiences where you're jumping across a road or jumping up and down or jumping left or right. It's like every game mechanic is based upon jumping in some way. And it's like, how many freaking jumping games can you play before you want to punch yourself in your own nose? Like three, and then you're done. Okay. Let's talk about routers. This one comes from Pebbles99 wants to know, I would like to hear what router people are using. Routers are something nobody discusses. I don't know why. They're dead sexy. But since we all love Wi-Fi and can't live without it, I would like to know what equipment is being used. Buster, do you even know what kind of router you have?
Yeah, I just have the Apple one. Leander, you reviewed the Eero router just recently, right?
Right.
What's up with that one, Leander?
Well, like Buster, you know, I had used Apple AirPort for years, and I was using like a fairly recent time capsule. I think it was like 2014, which is great for backing up, you know, the Macs and stuff like that. And Trace is obsessed with a digital photo library, so there have to be multiple copies at all times of that thing. So
smart woman.
Yeah, I was like, you know, so I had to do, but I had to do a lot of troubleshooting. The thing was kind of like was always difficult, especially to get it stretched across the house. And we live in a fairly small house. It's not a big house by any standards, about 1,000 square foot. And so I put the time capsule in the middle of the house, but it wouldn't really stretch to either end. And upstairs it was rubbish. And so it was okay when you were right next to it, but, you know, you wouldn't get coverage anywhere else. Like, we couldn't even get coverage in the kitchen, which is like the room next door to it. So I used to try putting in, I had a couple of AirPort Expresses, you know, the little the ones that look like the Apple TV. But they would be really flaky. Like, they would just never get it to work. I could never get it to be reliable. The handoff was awful, and they're always requiring restarts, and I'm pretty sure it slowed everything down. So anyway, so I got an Eero, which is a system that comes. They sell them in packs of three. You can buy them individually, but you should get a pack of three. Three little boxes. They look like the Apple AirPort Express, and they form a Wi-Fi mesh. So the idea is that they blanket the whole house in Wi-Fi, and they claim that you never need to restart, you never need to reboot these things. They're self-fixing, self-monitoring, and they get updates from the cloud. And I just checked this morning, they've already gotten about half a dozen updates, software updates, to improve this thing. There's a really simple app. It's dead simple to set up. You know, it comes in it's really Apple-like experience. It's a great unboxing. You open it up, and it has everything is numbered. So it's like, start here. You plug the first one in, and it's got two Ethernet jacks at the back and USB and a power port, and you plug the first one into your router, and then you go through the app, set up the name of the app, your network, put in the password, and then you turn on guest networking if you want to or not, and that's it. That's all you have to do. Then you add the second and the third, and you know, in the 2 or 3 weeks I've had it, super fast, no restarts, no dropouts, no weird glitches. We've got nearly 40 devices attached to this thing in the house. You know, the kids upstairs playing Xbox games, with two people watching Netflix. You know, we're doing all kinds of backups and surfing super fast. Like, it's been great. It's expensive. It's $500 for three of these things.
I was going to say, these things are sounding pretty good so far, like, especially how reliable they've been.
Yeah, it's expensive. But, you know, like I've had no headaches, and for me, it's been well worth it.
I have been using the Time Capsule as well. I kind of nerd out about routers. I really like trying different routers, and I love routers that are fast. I love routers that are sleek. I love routers with lights on them. I mean, I really nerd out over these things. And what I have found is I always end up coming back to Apple's routers because they're not the fastest. They don't necessarily have the best range in all these different scenarios, but their range is usually very good, and they are usually quite fast. But the thing is they're rock solid. They're always rock solid. Like I almost never need to restart my routers. And one of the biggest features that I love is the router will, all routers today are compatible with 802.11n and 802.11ac, right? But they won't auto switch, so you'll have to tell your device which network to connect to, and that it stays connected to that network until you want to switch. And what I like about the Apple router is it will do that automatically for you, and will switch your device from one to the other without you having to do anything, which may not sound like a major convenience, but it is. It's huge because when you are close to your router, you're going to want to use 802.11ac because it's much faster. But 802.11ac generally doesn't have as much range as 802.11n. So when you're farther away, you generally want to switch networks. And you don't have to know any of that stuff with an Apple router. It just does it for you automatically. And so I have always just stuck with the Apple routers because of those two reasons. It's reliable, it just works, and then it does the switching for me. And every time I try another router that may be faster or may have better range, it will sometimes excel in that one category, but then it causes you all sorts of headaches in virtually every other category. Like it will need to be restarted once a week, or your devices get disconnected sometimes and randomly. And you just get to a point where you're like, I don't want to mess with this stuff anymore. I just want my internet to work, right? That's what everyone wants in life. They just want internet and they want it to work. If you have that, I would argue you don't even need food, you don't need water, you just need working internet and you're good.
I think in theory that's all true, but I never had a really good experience with the Time Capsule. It was always flaky. It would require restarts, and maybe because if you look at where I live, there's about a dozen different networks from all our neighbors.
Maybe that's why.
I think there's a lot of interference, but it's actually supposed to correct for that. It's supposed to, you know, on boot up, right, it checks to see which is the least crowded channel and sets you to that. I don't think it adjusts itself dynamically, which some of the newer routers do. They switch between channels. Mm-hmm. And they keep a closer eye on interference. So mm-hmm. it would flake out. Then I'd have to restart it, and then it would be okay for a while. But then I don't know. You know, then it would crap out again. We had to restart the Time Capsule. Well, it was always inconsistent. You know, sometimes every few days. Sometimes it would go okay for months without any tinkering around. The backups, you know, would be really, really slow. Sometimes some computers would be really slow. Watching Netflix would glitch out. It was just always a
headache.
You have
one of the newer version Time Capsules?
Yeah.
I've
put it in different positions. I've tried, putting it in different rooms. I've tried, you know, all kinds of settings with it. I tried setting the channels manually, to see if that would make a difference.
How interesting.
All kinds of stuff. And it's supposed to be really advanced. I mean, it has, like, 12 antennas, and it's supposed to, like, check on its own signal to see if it's bouncing, and it'll tune the antennas to send the stronger signal to different parts of the house to try to increase the range. It's supposed to be really advanced, but it just never really worked for me.
Huh.
But I've heard other things.
It's interesting to me that we could have such different experiences with the same device, because mine was the totally opposite experience. It's been the most reliable router I've ever had.
Yeah, right. And a bunch of people in the comments on that Eero review said the same thing. Like, you know, there's something wrong because they've had a great experience with theirs.
Yeah, maybe if you live in an area with a lot of neighbors close by.
That was the only thing I could figure out was the problem. Because actually, I got a Time Capsule here at the office, and it's rock solid. And but the office is even more crowded here. I mean, we've got dozens of networks.
Okay, I think we're starting to determine that maybe you just have a bad router.
I don't know.
You know. I think there might be something wrong with your router, Leander.
I had the same problem. I upgraded it because I had the same problem I had a previous time capsule, and before that I had like an Airport Express and an Airport Extreme, and I've had everyone. You know, remember the UFO ones? I had the I remember the silver one. I had a white one. I had a silver one. I've had every Apple Airport ever, and nothing but really. I mean, I tried using some of the D-Link, I think. I've tried other routers, but like you said, they're always kind of like, the software's always sort of really hairy, right? And
oh, gosh, the software on all of them is awful.
Yeah.
The worst-looking software. You could just tell. They had it built by engineers, and they're like, hey, should we hire some UI guys? Or like, UI guys, who needs those guys? Look at this beautiful piece of software right here.
Well, you can
do like a lot. Sloth.
You can do a lot more things. I mean, some people love getting into the settings, don't they? In the router, you sound like one of those.
Yeah, but I definitely do.
Yeah, and I've definitely done some of that stuff. I've done all kinds of tuning. You know, on you got to 109.0.0.1 or whatever the HTML.
Yep, that's exactly the number.
log in on the interface there and then mess around with all kinds of stuff, and I've done all kinds of port forwarding and
which is oftentimes necessary. I mean, especially if you have an Xbox or something in your house and you are trying to route traffic or open up the ports that you can use Xbox Live services or something, because that can be a problem with the Apple routers, especially sometimes they have issues with that type of thing, so you need to hop in there and do that. So sometimes it's necessary, and actually, I would say my major complaint about the Apple routers is the lack of advanced features that you get. It's really rudimentary. There's a lot of features that I would consider basic that it doesn't allow you to do, such as like quality of service, so you can determine which services have priority over others.
Right.
That kind of stuff just isn't supported by Apple routers for whatever reason, and it's totally perplexing. I mean, that router has been out for, 15 years now? And they rarely change the software. The software has been largely the same.
I think the software really lags now, you know, to be honest. I don't think it's as good as it used to be. And it is kind of really confusing. And if you do mess with some stuff, you can easily, make a hash of it. It's not always really clear, is it? I mean, even stuff like the kind of security things you want to choose, it's not clear which one is better than the other. I think it's a little bit, it's not, they definitely need to revisit the Airport software.
Yeah, they need to totally revamp that whole system and maybe create cues for people to see what things can be changed and why you would want to change those things.
Right.
And then just make it prettier and add a lot more features. It's been the same for like 8 years.
Yeah.
They just haven't changed it at all.
Right. There's another one called Lumo, which is very much like Aero, which it comes in packs of three. And that's supposed to even, that's getting really good rave reviews. Because
it's called Lumo?
Lumo, yeah, L-U-M-O. And it comes in like packs of three. It's like three little hockey pucks. And there's people are raving about the software on that.
Huh.
Saying that it's a lot more it's a lot more tweakable than the Aero one. The Aero one hides a lot of settings, and there's things you can't do with it. But so if you want to have a bit more, more options, then Lumo's the one to look at. I haven't looked at it. I don't know, but it's getting good reviews. Yeah, there's a move definitely towards, getting multiple access points rather than, relying on one.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way of approaching that problem of keeping solid Wi-Fi coverage everywhere in your house. And you can do that with Apple routers. You just have to link them together. And, of course, you have to buy a bunch of different Apple routers to do so. And people don't necessarily know how to link stuff together in the software.
Yeah, and it's Luma, L-U-M-A. Sorry, L-U-M-A.
L-U-M-A. And how much is that one, Leander?
I think it is
$500
a little cheaper, and it says pre-order. So $150 per device and $299 for three devices. So it's $200 cheaper than the Aero one. But it's not available yet. It says you can pre-order it.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up with that. I did not think we'd be able to talk for 10 minutes on routers, nor did I think that Leander would have anything to contribute about routers.
Oh,
I thought it was
really?
Going to be me doing a monologue. I mean, I think routers are dead sexy, and I'm glad to know that Leander does as well. I didn't know I had a partner in this technology. Let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the CultCast we have for you guys this week. I want to thank everyone who contributed to our subreddit, thecultcast.reddit.com. We'll definitely have to do this again. We appreciate everyone's contributions. If you want to come tell us what router you prefer, we're on Twitter. I'm at AirFunBusters, BST3R. Leander is L. Caney. And David is in Minnesota somewhere. You'll have to send him a handwritten letter.
David at cultofmac.com.
Oh, there you go. Or that works, too. Oh, you use electronic mail now? That's
it's
great.
Yeah, it's very old-fashioned right now.
This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody looked beautiful.
Everyone looked beautiful, and I looked like...
Did you kiss the dog?
A zombie. Huh?
Did you make out with your dog?
Yeah. I did, and then I wiped my eyes, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's Alex Ehe's mom.
What movie was this with the Vaseline?
Shallow Hal. Have you seen it?
No, who's in it?
Jack Black.
God.
Tony Robbins.
Tony Robbins. In one of his few movie roles. And the guy from Seinfeld, Jason Alexander.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And it's actually really funny. Buster, it's like one of Buster's favorite movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Kyle Gass, who's in all of Jack Black's movies.
Kyle Gass is hilarious.
He's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I rewatched Almost Famous.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
You've never seen Almost Famous?
No. Nope.
Have you guys seen Almost Famous?
I have.
Yeah. Hated it.
Did you?
Almost a good movie.
Of course. Did you almost like it?
No. I fucking hated it. I really, really fucking hated it.
I think it's probably in my top, potentially top 10, definitely top 20 favorite movies.
Come on. You're having me on.
It's brilliant.
That's embarrassing.
It's a fantastic movie.
It's awful.
There's nothing about it that I don't like. It's like almost like a masterpiece.
Oh, you're joking.
I'm dead serious.
It's complete drivel.
It reminds me of that painful melancholy of youthful love. You know those relationships that you get into and then you're not really sure if you're into them, and you really love the other person but you don't know if they love you, and like you thought they were your girlfriend, but it seems like they might actually have a boyfriend. You're like, what's going on? All that craziness from that time of life, it characterizes those things perfectly. And that's probably why Leander liked it, because he didn't start dating until he was 25.
Yeah, I thought it was just too phony baloney. I mean, it's a great idea, and it's actually based on his real life, isn't it? He became a Rolling Stone correspondent at a really young age.
I don't know how much of the story was factual.
Yeah, well, very little of it. I mean, if it had been more realistic, I would, and more, you know, straightforward, I would have, I might have liked it. But
it's a movie.
So phony baloney.
It's a movie.
Yeah, like Coldplay, phony baloney.
And yet you love them.
I hate them.
I don't understand.
Hate. Do you know what I just found out? Brian Eno worked with Coldplay.
Yeah.
Which has completely recast Brian Eno's entire career for me. I was like, oh my God. How could it? And I've met him too. I met him here in San Francisco. And I've always been a huge Brian Eno fan. But like, what? Coldplay? Are you joking?
He clearly sees something that you don't in his expert eye.
Yeah. He's worked with, it's an amazing list of folks that he's worked with.
Yeah, for sure.
And some of my all-time favorites.
Well, what bands has he worked with that you actually like?
Roxy Music, Talking Heads, David Bowie.
With Talking Heads, okay. That's
good. A ton. I love all those guys, too.
Did you say Roxy Music?
Yeah, you don't know them?
Never heard of them.
Oh, my God, awesome. 70s glam rock band.
Them
Brian
you like.
Ferry. Brian Ferry was the lead singer.
Roxy Music?
They are
music?
Astonishing. They are a great, great band. Do you know them, Dave?
I do, but I don't know who David Bowie is.
Yeah, nor do I.
Oh,
is that David
Bowie?
Is that Bowie's cousin?
Bowie. Yeah. I'm afraid I'm the one who's right here, being British. Bowie.